Welcome back. I hope you have been reflecting on the last session and the power of the Holy Spirit in your messages. I want to continue today just looking at what you see there, practical considerations. One of them is preaching in pain. Now, I want to imagine, put yourself in this situation for just a moment. Imagine that your church is growing. You know, you've gotten a reputation as a preacher, and as a result, more and more people are coming to hear you preach. And you decide that you're going to buy a new building, or you're going to rehab an older building, large building, and you move into this new building where there's room for thousands of people to come. A couple of thousand people can come hear you preach. And it's a great moment. You have that first service you've been planning for. The instrumentalists and the musicians, our vocalists are excited about coming together in this new place with all these new people who are coming. And the place is packed. Every seat is taken and there are some people standing up. And then all of a sudden somebody yells, "Fire!" And people scramble for the exits and seven people are killed in the scramble to get out. Imagine how horrible that would be. Imagine, you'll notice there are 27 years, imagine that your wife becomes an invalid, gets sick, and for 27 years never hears you preach, except when you're practicing at home. She never can come to church. She can never listen to you. She can never give you a feedback on how the audience took it. She's totally separated from church. Imagine that. Then imagine that you develop what used to be called rheumatism. You know, a pain in your joints that you move. You develop gout so that some of your joints swell and it's painful to hold a pen and write your sermons out because you write them. You develop inflamed kidneys. As a result, sometimes you are bedridden. Then add to that the fact that you've got critics. Critics are who come not only because you've taken, you know, and many of them are your fellow pastors in town, but they're critics because you've taken their people. They started coming to your church, and so they criticize you. And some even suggest in public and in print that you aren't even converted. And then some in your own church criticize decisions that are made and criticize you, saying you're building your kingdom. You're not building God's kingdom. And then imagine that you start experiencing depression. Depression so much that it crushes you. And sometimes you just have to absent yourself from the pulpit because you can't get out of bed in the morning. Imagine yourself like that and preaching like that. Now, the person I'm describing is real. This is Charles Haddon Spurgeon. I've spoken of him several times during this class. He was known as the Prince of Preachers back in the mid to late 1800s in London. And that describes his life. That describes what it was like for him. And yet, you know, in all of that stuff, he would continue to come back into the pulpit and preach. And he preached not only in the pulpit, but he would teach. He had a school for preachers where back then only men came, but men would come to hear his wisdom about how do you preach? How do you preach? How do you experience those things we've been talking about in this class? And how do you experience the power of the Holy Spirit? And I did all that in spite of all that pain in his life. Now, here's the truth, that if you're a preacher, preaching... I'm going to end in the next section talking just about what an honorable task it is to be presenting the Word of God. But here is a truth that you've got to know. Every preacher must preach through pain sometimes. Every one of us will experience pain sometimes. And we're going to have to get up and preach while we are in pain. Now, there are a bunch of sources of pain. You know, there's physical pain. There's a kind of physical pain that will be distracting to you. And you have to get up and preach. I had this just a few months ago. I have a shoulder on my left here that is got a big bone spur in it. I don't need to tell you about that. But I purchased a new massager that I had seen in a thrift store. And on a Saturday night, I decided to massage that shoulder, that whole area back here, with a deep tissue massage. And so I did that. Woke up at 4:30 in the morning on Sunday morning when I was supposed to preach, and my arm was just throbbing and the pain, I couldn't get it under control for a while. I ended up taking medications that I had trying to get the pain under control. And it came time to, you know, am I going to be able to preach or not? And I said, I think I can do this. And I went to church that morning and I could hardly move that arm. And so my gestures were very, very limited. But it was the physical pain and it was so distracting that I went home and I had to sleep that day and that night in a recliner because I couldn't lie down on that shoulder. There are days like that when you get up and physically, especially those of us who are getting older, you know, the pains increase. Now, you know, I'll talk in a few moments about sharing your pain in an appropriate way, and there are inappropriate ways to share it, but just know that there are going to be times you're in physical pain. There are times you'll be in emotional pain. You know, when I read some of the testimonies on Christian Leaders Institute website, and you know the place where you can tell stories to each other, I'm impressed at some of the pain, emotional pain, the scars that some people bear. You know, you hear stories about people there who, you know, who are drug addicted, and they sold themselves in order to pay for their addictions, and they've experienced God's grace and mercy and restoration, and now they're studying for ministry. But there's those scars back there. There's those memories. There's those people. And sometimes emotional pain is what you're going to experience. You're not immune from depression just because you preach the Word of God. Family stress can be a huge source of pain. It's hard to get up in the morning sometimes when you're hurting because of something. My partner in ministry for 20 years, one of my partners in ministry, had a son. And it was an adopted son, but a beloved son. And the son, when he was in middle school, just started to get into trouble. And that trouble led to drugs. And the drugs led to you know, crimes in his life. And, you know, they've sent him to treatment. They paid a fortune out in money for him to go into treatment in various places to try to get a hold of his anger issues, try to get a hold of some of the identity issues. As an adopted child, he was African-American, and the family he was adopted into was white. And so all that stuff. So they put him into counseling. They put him into treatment centers. They paid the price for this kid. And yet, you know, what happened as he became an adult was that, you know, he would get caught committing crimes in order to get money to pay for a drug habit, and then he'd go to jail. And in jail, he would have a conversion again. And I remember visiting this young man in jail, and he could be very sweet-spirited, but he'd come out of jail. 6 months later, he'd be back in. And he finally died at the age of 31 from a drug overdose. And during that span of years, my partner had a regular preaching commitment that he had to make in our church. How do you do that? How do you do that? Sometimes pain just comes from a twisted world. You know, the world is twisted as a result of the fall. And as a result, things happen, like accidents. You know, a drunk driver will hit you, and all of a sudden you are limited in what you're able to do on a particular day or on a particular week or month or the rest of your life. There's friendly fire. There's friendly fire, and there's apathy. Now, I want to look at a couple of these in more detail. When you are experiencing family pain, physical pain, emotional pain, world pain, what do you do? Well, number one is you look for what God is teaching you in this time. Here's a quote from Spurgeon himself, this guy who went through all this stuff. He said, "I'm afraid that all the grace that I've got of my comfortable and easy times and happy hours might almost lie on a penny. But the good that I have received from my sorrows and pains and griefs is altogether incalculable. Affliction is the best bit of furniture in my house. It is the best book in the minister's library." Oh man, how could you say that? But the reality is, any survey that I know of that's been done of what were the great times of spiritual growth in your life, people will identify times of pain and uncertainty. That's when God became real to them in a more powerful way. And Paul talks about this. He says, therefore, he's talking about all the things he's seen, all the visions he's had, the fact that he has been up to the third heaven, etc. He said, therefore, in order to keep me from being conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Now, we don't know exactly what that was. Some believe it was an eye condition because of the way Paul describes what the Galatians did for him in the book of the letter to the Galatian churches. We don't know exactly what it was, but it was something that hurt, like a thorn hurts. It was something that put limitations on him. He said, three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, my grace, excuse me, is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, he says, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. Yeah. So what do you do when you experience family stress, physical, emotional pain? What do you do? Well, the first thing you should do is look at what God might be teaching you. Second thing, number two there, is use all means for relief. Now, I experienced three periods of clinical depression in my life, and I went to counselors, and I took antidepressive medications because we know that some part of depression is physical, that as we get down, our brain starts producing the improper chemicals or isn't able to take up the right chemicals, and so there are medications. Use every means necessary. Use friends, use escape, use whatever. And number three, share your pain. Share your pain with your church. Don't try to pretend everything's right, but do it appropriately. Now, the person I think of there is Rick Warren and his wife, Kay. You'll notice the title there, After a Son's Suicide. Rick Warren is the pastor of Saddleback Church in Southern California. It's a mega church. It's had impact on thousands upon thousands of people. And many of those thousands coming to Christ through the ministry of that church. Rick is known as a humble man. He's given away almost all of his money. He's written books that have received, and he's received a ton of money as a result. He's given almost all of it away. He's returned most of his salary to the church as a result of money he received from his books. He's a humble, generous man. And yet he has a son who is dealing with depression and finally takes his own life. How do you respond to that as a preacher? Well, he took 16 weeks off from the pulpit. When he came back to preach, he and his wife came, and they stood before their congregation, and they thanked the congregation for their support and their prayers and their love during this time. And then he preached his first sermon. How do you preach with that kind of pain in your life? And his first sermon was simply this: why we continue to trust God. Even though, he said, we prayed every single day of their son's adult life, they prayed for healing from that depression that he experienced. And apparently God's answer was no. But why do we continue to trust God? His pain became an avenue for people to have greater understanding. And that day in the audience, there were people who understood because there are things that happened to them that they've prayed for solutions. They didn't come the way that they wanted them to come. And so as a result, people learn to trust God through the pain. That's appropriate sharing of pain. Now, there's inappropriate sharing of pain. John Maxwell, who's been one of my mentors, once went to visit and hear someone preach. And the person got up there and complained about the fact, I think I shared this with you before, the fact his back hurt so much, and boy, he didn't know if he could preach today, and da-da-da-da-da. Maxwell went to him afterwards and said, don't talk about that stuff. These people don't want to hear that. That's inappropriate pain because it draws the attention to you. And what makes people feel sorry for you, it doesn't direct their attention to God and how you are dealing with this through your faith in God. And so share your pain, but share it appropriately. Other kind of pain that's somehow very difficult, and that is friendly fire. That's one of them. There's times when you're going to experience critics. And, you may think that people will say you're a great preacher, and there are times when you're going to have them figure out that you're not such a great person. And the reality is going to set in. There are two predictable times where that's going to happen. One is the honeymoon is over. When you come to a new church, a new preaching station, there's going to be a honeymoon period. In fact, people will just love you. And they will affirm you, and they will give thanks for you. But that honeymoon period will last somewhere between 6 months to a year. Maybe for the best of us, it'll last 2 years. And then people begin to see your weaknesses. And people begin to, maybe not quite like so much how you present your message. And they will let you know. Or maybe they've got a different agenda for the church, and they'll let you know. And so what do you do then? Well, you keep calm, as this banner says. The honeymoon is over, but you keep calm. What do you do during those times? You remember your call. I talked to a young man just a few weeks ago. He was going through a difficult time in his church. And the critics have come out, and they accuse him of all sorts of stuff. And he says, I'm there because God called me here. God called me to preach here. Remember your call. Renew the vision with your leaders. Now, whether those leaders are appointed leaders, elders and deacons, or whether they just are people of influence in your church, get together with them and renew where you're going in your church and why you're going there, so that you can be able to say to the congregation, this is not just me here, we're trying to accomplish something, and my preaching and my leadership are part of that whole process. Renew the vision. Remind yourself who gets the glory. That if you're getting criticized at a certain time or place, that's been true for the prophets in the Old Testament. It was true for the disciples who became apostles in the New Testament. It's normal. Remember that God's got to get the glory for what happens. And then find refreshment. Find it where you can in people. You know, I have a good friend. He's been a friend for over 50 years. And when I would start getting down because the friendly fire was getting me down, the honeymoon over, I would call him. And somehow we had the gift of making each other laugh. And it was just a time of refreshment. And there are a few people like that I would talk to. I would seek them out to say, you know, hey, just talk with me. Let's go for a walk, one man, just because I just want to share with you my heart. And places to go that are refreshing for you. Sometimes, you know, it's an escape to, you know, a place with a pool. You know, we used to escape to Palm Springs or to the beach occasionally when I lived in Southern California. Or things that give you satisfaction. You love to read, make sure you make time for that. You love to play a certain game. You love to golf, make time for that. Do the things that are refreshing to you. So that's if there's friendly fire in the sense the honeymoon is over. There's another kind that's a little bit longer and more difficult to deal with, and that's called the pioneer-homesteader conflict. Now, the pioneers refers to, you know, in our country, but in other places as well, when the West was being conquered, and I don't want to get into the morality of that right now. I know that there were all kinds of abhorrent things that were done with the Native Americans that were there and all that sort of thing. But pioneers came in and they settled. They built houses out of sod. They lived with dirt floors, no windows. They tilled the soil and they brought that land, which was just rough, under control. And they paved the way for the homesteaders to come. You'll notice the what is the Homestead Act of 1862? That in the Homestead Act, land was given to people who would go out and settle there. Now the pioneers, after a period of time, when the homesteaders began to settle around them, the pioneers began to ask the question, who's in charge here? Now that's become a phrase. The pioneer-homesteader conflict has been applied to the church. And it happens when the number of new people, since this pastor came, since you came, let's say, the number of new people who come begins to equal the number of pioneers who were there, who spent money to get that church going, who gave themselves to get it going, and now these homesteaders are coming in, these new people, and they're taking over positions of leadership, and they're getting involved in the ministry, and the question starts to arise, who's in charge here? And it's known sometimes as the pioneer-homesteader conflict. Sometimes it's known as the Whitewater period. And I tell you, I've had people, I went through that when I was in California, and it was not pleasant at all. It went for about 2 years. And at one point I went to the chairman of elders. Elders were in the church in our structure, are the leaders in the church who were my supervisors and the ones who were responsible for my care. I went to the chairman of the elders and I said, you know, I'm going to be gone in a year if this doesn't clear up. I had people criticizing the way I kept my house. It was a church-owned home. And people criticizing, saying, you know, we couldn't have a dog in our house, things like that. It was just this nitpicking stuff. And people saying, you know, you're trying to build your own kingdom. You're not trying to build God's kingdom. Those kind of things that were hurtful and painful. So I'll be gone in a year. And in fact, most pastors in the United States leave when the pioneer-homesteader conflict starts going. I want to encourage you to stay during this time. Look at this statement of Paul. He's writing to the Corinthians. He says, I hope to spend some time with you if the Lord permits, but I will stay in Ephesus until Pentecost. Why? For a wide door for effective work is open to me, and there are many adversaries. Can you imagine saying, I'm staying here because there are people who are really ticked at me? Hang in there. What do you do during those times? Well, you remember your call. You renew the vision with your leaders. You remind yourself who gets the glory. You get refreshment from those places and people that you get refreshment. And don't avoid the critics. I made it a practice to make sure I approached them, that I didn't reject them in the process. So, there's sources of pain. All of those, the last one listed is apathy. Jesus made it very clear when he gave the parable of the soils that the seed of the word was going to fall on different kinds of soil. And then a couple of those kinds, it's going to be unproductive, right? It's going to be the thorny soil where it will, it'll spring up quickly and then it will fade away because the weeds and stuff destroy it. The soil beside the road, the rocky soil, the good soil, all these different kinds of soil are going to receive the word differently. People are going to receive the word differently. And there, some of those will be just apathetic. Look at this, ongoing. Still others, like the seed sown among thorns, hear the word, but the worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, and the desire for other things come in and choke the word, making it unfruitful. And so there's going to be people who will be unfruitful in your ministry. You'll want spiritual growth for them. You'll want it for the church, and it's not happening. And what do you do then in that time of pain? Remember your call. Assess the vision with your leaders. Remind yourself who gets the glory. Refreshment from people, places, things. Pray, pray, pray. And then watch for God's deliverance. And it will come. You got to hang in there. But in the process, you're going to learn about God in ways that you never would if things were going smoothly. So preach, even when in pain. We'll see you next time for the final session.